Typically, there are other lawsuits, right? This is not the only one, this class action.
That's right. There are other lawsuits that are still proceeding. One, in fact, interestingly, brought by the New York State Attorney General's office against the city of New York, seeking injunctive relief to reform the police department's policing of protest events.
And finally, Sanji Lopez, you were not kettled in. You escaped that. But can you talk about the effect on you as a journalist who is filming, seeing these people kettled in, being beaten by the police?
Absolutely, Amy. Me, beyond being a journalist, I'm a community member. I grew up in this area, so it hurt to see my community being beat like this. And as, you know, in response to the class action lawsuit, it's great that people are getting monetary, you know, being compensated monetarily, but we also need some trauma, some healing, maybe therapy offered to folks like myself who ran away, who were able to get away from this. I also wanted to add really quickly, Amy, that Mott Haven Families, a community group with children and adults, protest in front of the 40th precinct, demanding accountability and asking the question, what happened on June 4th for months on end, and had no response, no answer from the NYPD or accountability from the city. And meanwhile, a jail was being built in Mott Haven across the street from my former middle school while all of this was happening. So this is just a traumatic event. And I think that we need to remember that people are still healing from this to this day.
Well, Sanji Lopez, I want to thank you for joining us on screen today. Democracy Now! Video News Fellow, film the protest in 2020. Samira and Amelie Sierra, named plaintiffs in this historic class action lawsuit. And Joshua Moskowitz, lawyer for the plaintiffs. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to Africa's most populous country, to Nigeria, where opposition parties are disputing the results of this weekend's presidential election, Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission has declared the winner to be Bola Tinubu of the ruling All Progressives Congress Party. Tinubu is the former governor of Lagos, played a key role in helping outgoing Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari win two terms in office. He campaigned using the slogan, "It's my turn." Tinubu received 36% of the vote. Turnout was under 30%. Several of Tinubu's challengers have disputed the results, alleging fraud, while election observers and voters have cited delays, closures and violence at voting sites. On Thursday, Peter Obi, who placed third despite winning in Lagos, announced he would contest the election results in court.
Let me reiterate, and I assure you that good people of Nigeria that will explore all legal and peaceful options to reclaim our mandate. We won the election, and we will prove it to Nigerians.
We go now to Lagos, Nigeria, where we're joined by Adoraka Ige. She is a human rights activist, lawyer, who works with Corporate Accountability and Public Participation Africa. I mean, you have this election being challenged by civic groups, by international groups, from the EU monitoring group to the U.S. International Republican Institute to the National Democratic Institute, across the board. Describe what happened.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your platform again. I've been here before. In a nutshell, what happened on Saturday, which was, of course, the Nigeria's general election, which was supposed to be also the election that helped the people to bring into office the president and then the legislature at the national level. So there were three elections on that day, for the presidency, for the Senate, and the House of Representatives, which are the legislative arms of government at the national level. I think that it's no gainsaying that, like you said also in your introduction, a lot of disappointment, a lot of complaints have also riddled or have been the aftermath of that election. I had the privilege of observing the election, and I also voted as a citizen. One of the first things I would say I immediately noticed was the fact that there was late deployment of even the INEC officers in certain polling units, some of the places where I observed. I had to personally even play the role of, because I had observed that for a long time, people were just waiting, and then the wait became panic, and it became tension and agitation. So in that sense, you would have to play the role of a mediator, someone who is comforting, but someone also who wants the process to be as credible as possible. So by the time the INEC officers arrived, I was the first person to ask them, but why this delay? In fact, I was really imagining that it was because they didn't have security, maybe. And then they went ahead to say, oh, no, it was not even security. They just had logistical challenges. That was what they cited. So it was not shocking that after the, even as the elections were going on, there were real-time videos, messaging, and so on, of people just complaining about very similar things. And then another thing that was really obvious in Saturday's elections was the fact that there were so many irregularities, or at least alleged irregularities, given pieces of evidence that came forward in certain places. Meanwhile, in other parts of the country, of course, people said they voted peacefully, there were no issues for them. But then, so I'm trying to balance it here so it doesn't look like hasty generalization. But from what we saw, there were also cases of violence, pockets of violence here and there, of people being brutalized, or even open intimidation, threat to certain voters because probably of tribe and, you know, just locations. And then they were really harassed. And some people could also not vote at the end of the day. So that's the summary of the elections.
And talk about the significance of the ruling party, well, so-called winning, Tinubu continuing on.
Hello, Amy. Please, can you take that again?
Oh, I was just asking if you can talk about the significance of Bola Tinubu saying that he won, the ruling party continuing to rule from Buhari.
Oh, I mean, okay, so I think this will take us back a little bit, because I remember the last time I was here, you know, we were talking about the NSARS movement, protests that eventually became a movement. And if you remember, Amy, it was also that movement itself, or the series of protests, were unceremoniously truncated by what was alleged to have been involvement of the state. And that movement also that was essentially led and activated by young people was what metamorphosed, in my opinion, and the opinion of so many people, metamorphosed into a certain kind of people power led by young people who felt that because their voices were not validated or even heard back then in 2020, they were going to deploy all of that energy and that anger, raw frustration into the 2023 elections, meaning that a lot of people also, in that sense, wanted the ruling power, the current ruling power, APC, out of power. Most of them, young people. So for those young people, which class I also belong to, it was a time to speak loudly and clearly, probably not on the streets anymore at this point, but through the ballot. So for them, because of all these irregularities, which I would also say categorically that our election monitoring body or management body, INEC in this case, played a role in also giving validation to, it's for them, it was an unfair process. For a lot of young people also, it's a process that did not allow their voices to be heard. What we saw was immediately after the truncation of the NSAS protest, a lot of the energy that was channeled was not just about waiting to vote in 2023, but also the fact that a lot of young people got involved in the process, even by putting themselves forward for political offices, engaging the system, engaging the politics, and also deciding to be candidates. So that was a great thing that was really applauded. But with this whole gamut of what has happened, it's also like a dash of hope. It's a truncation, another form of truncation of the kind of trust that the young people also still repose a little bit in the system, because this time around is meant to be conducted by an independent National Electoral Commission, not necessarily the ruling party. And you might find it interesting to also know that between then and now, a lot has happened, including the review or the amendment of the electoral law, which essentially is the Electoral Act of Nigeria, which a lot of people also applauded because we saw some innovations coming into the act, beginning with even funding what is now supposed to be at a level of financial autonomy for the election management body. Also, introduction of, or at least legitimization of technology in the electoral process itself. But all of that has, I think, hopes have been dashed. A lot of trust has also been crushed. So any claim that is being held by any political aspirant or even candidate right now can be subjected to tests.
Adoranke Ige, we want to thank you so much for being with us, human rights activist and lawyer joining us from Lagos, Nigeria. On Monday, we'll continue to look at this election in Africa's most populous country. Next up, as Guatemala bans Telma Cabrera, the Mayamam environmental and human rights activist from running for president, in a rare U.S. interview, we'll speak with Telma Cabrera and her running mates. Stay with us.
Del caos. Perdonen si arruino esta fiesta patria. Esto no es democracia, más bien una falacia. No tienen eficacia las falsas elecciones. El falo que gobierna solo son las erecciones. Son las lecciones de un pueblo sin memoria que se toma las calles pero no lee historia. La verdadera guerra no ha terminado. Los que nos masacraron han controlan el Estado. ¿A quién conviene el orden que se mantiene? Perdonen, pero el optimismo ya no me sostiene. Hago lo que puedo, pero no es suficiente. Aunque intento, no entiendo al resto de la gente. ¿Qué más das? Igual no me entiendo a mí. Vivo en conflicto y no sé a dónde ir.
Si no Queen of Chaos by Guatemalan feminist hip-hop artist Rebecca Lane. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. From the Nigerian election to the election in this hemisphere, to Guatemala. We end today's show looking at this year's presidential election there, happening at a time of worsening repression in Guatemala against journalists, human rights activists, and indigenous environmental defenders in the Central American country. The Guatemalan Constitutional Court Thursday ruled against presidential candidate Telma Cabrera and her running mate, exiled human rights ombudsman Jordan Rodas, upholding a February decision by Guatemala Supreme Electoral Tribunal to block them from the ballot. Cabrera and Rodas are members of the leftist political party, the Movement for the Liberation of the Peoples, which grew out of the indigenous-led farmers' rights organization CODECA. Across Guatemala, thousands have taken to the streets in protest, demanding that Cabrera and Rodas be allowed to participate in June's election. Telma Cabrera is a Mayamam environmental and human rights defender who also ran for president in 2019, receiving an unprecedented wave of support. She got about 10% of the vote. Rodas served as human rights prosecutor in Guatemala from 2017 until last year, when he was forced to flee for allying himself with anti-corruption efforts. While they're being banned from participating in the election, the Guatemalan Constitutional Court has confirmed the presidential candidacy of the conservative Zuri Rios. She's the daughter of the dead former U.S.-backed military dictator Efrain Rios Montt, who rose to power after a coup in 1982. Rios Montt was convicted of genocide and crimes against humanity 10 years ago. Zuri Rios had been prohibited from running in 2019 due to a constitutional measure that doesn't allow figures who came to power by coup or their blood relatives to run for president. Cabrera and Rodas took their fight to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights in Washington, D.C. last month. They also traveled to New York, where Democracy Now! Spoke with them. I began by asking Telma Cabrera for her response to being blocked from the election.
La respuesta de nosotros los pueblos viene a ratificar.
The response as indigenous people is that this ratifies what we've always denounced, that Guatemala is a corrupt state that's been co-opted by criminals. This is now reflected in violating our right to participate in this presidential election. They fear not Thelma, but the people who organized and are putting forward their proposals for structural change in Guatemala.
I mean, the significance of your candidacy. In 2019, you got 10% of the vote, more than any indigenous person in Guatemalan history. I think before that, Rigoberta Menchú got 3%. Ultimately, the president, Giamatté, got 14%. You got 10%. Talk about what you represent to the Pactos de Corruptos, which people should understand around the world, what's called the Pact of the Corrupt, that is taking you off the ballot.
A través del fraude electoral que se dio, supuestamente eso es el
through the election fraud took place. Supposedly, we came in fourth place, but we, the peoples, understand that we did better, first or second place. But in the face of this electoral fraud, that's the place that they said we came in. Indigenous peoples, we are a menace to the corrupt pact because what we propose is a project for the nation, a popular plurinational assembly in the face of the whole context that we're experiencing, context marked by assassinations, imprisonment, and the looting of our wealth in Guatemala. So what we are proposing is a constitutional assembly, and that they are fearful of us, the peoples governing ourselves.
Quiero agregar algo que ahí demuestra que es el castigo.
I'd like to add something. This shows that they're punishing us as a people prohibiting our rights to political participation. Persecution is not new. It's been happening since 2018. From 2018 to date, there have been 26 assassinations of human rights defenders, of those of us who defend our territories and the Mother Earth. So the best way to punish us is to forbid our participation. But we're not after candidacies. We are promoting a whole project for the nation. Our struggle will continue even after the elections. And that is why we're continuing along the path that we've chosen on thus far.
Jordán de Rodas, can you respond to both of you? You're the vice presidential candidate, and Thelma Cabrera is the presidential candidate, being banned from the Guatemalan presidential elections this year.
Bueno, es que le provocamos pánico al pacto de corruptos.
Well, we are causing panic to the Pact of the Corrupt Ones, which is an alliance between the political sector and the economic sector. They've looted the country for decades, indeed for centuries, perhaps. It's in their interest to maintain the status quo, the situation as is, with three structural problems: inequality, discrimination, racism, and corruption. So the strength of the LP, headed up by Thelma Cabrera, supplemented with what Jordán Rodas can contribute with an experience based on defending human rights. And I aspired to be the director of the University of San Carlos, but this has caused them panic. They know that we're the only real option for change. Everything else is just continuing with the same thing, just changing the face of a puppet. Might be a woman, it might be a man, but not like us. We know what the real problems are, and we are going to propose real solutions.
Why did you go into exile? You joined so many advocates, judges, lawyers who have left Guatemala. Why did you leave?
Bueno, hemos tenido que salir muchos los que jugamos un papel.
Many of us who played a role in favor of the struggle against impunity and corruption have had to leave. In my case, as human rights ombudsman, the week after I assumed my office in August 2017, former President Jimmy Morales declared Iván Velásquez persona non grata and ordered his expulsion. He was then the commissioner of CICIG. Today, he's defense minister of the Petro administration in Colombia. And I brought a Pareto action that stopped that arbitrary action by the president. Then he wanted to end the commission before its time. It was touching, getting into sensitive matters. Its investigations were reaching high-level political and economic figures in the Guatemalan state. And so it was an obstacle for the continuation of impunity, and that is why many judges and other judicial officers had to leave. This was not just backsliding. This was revenge against those who had impacted their interests.
Telma Cabrera, the leading candidate for president right now is Zuri Rios. Zuri Rios is the daughter of President, former General Rios Montt, who was found guilty of genocide against the Mayan people, your people, in the Northwest Highlands of Guatemala. She insists there was no genocide. Can you talk about this and talk about this history?
Eso también viene a ratificar la actitud de un estado fallido.
That also ratifies the attitude of a failed state that shows that the electoral tribunal is corrupted. It's been co-opted by criminals. Because this background, being the daughter of one who carried out a genocide, tells the people very much, and this shows that the system itself, through its laws, is violating the rights that we have as a people. That is an expression of racism and discrimination against us, the peoples. And that tells us, that gives the people a lesson, that the power of the powerful resides in the different institutions of the state. It's not that they enjoy support, but rather it is power that has been structured in and operates in the institutions. So we as a people tell our brothers and sisters that that is the result of the failed and corrupted state. And the same ones are violating rights and bringing an end to the little bit of democracy that exists in Guatemala. For here, we see that same ones who are excluding the people who are the ones who are bringing into democracy in Guatemala. So the attitude of the Supreme Electoral Tribunal is clear. And we are following the rules of the system in terms of registering our candidacy, but they exclude us. So it's quite clear in whose hands power and who it is, who is serving these interests.
Can you talk about the role of the United States then in supporting the military dictator, for example, General Rios Montt, the deaths of some 200,000 Guatemalans, and what that has wrought today, decades later? I'd like to ask both of you that question, beginning with Telma.
Bueno, en este caso, por ejemplo, cuando...
Well, in this case, for example, when there are foreign companies that are also operating in Guatemala, for example, as Crower, I'm not sure how to pronounce it in English, but this is a company, a business for electricity distribution that ended up in the hands of a U.S. company, and this also led communities to demand nationalization of the electricity utilities in Guatemala. They also suffered sabotages and repression, where there was complicity of the government of Guatemala, and transnational companies are central in the U.S.
Bueno, yo pienso que es importante tener memoria histórica.
I think it's important to have historical memory. The government of the United States has played a very unfortunate role at certain times. For example, it backed the counter-revolution in 1954 that put an end to a decade of a democratic spring. Subsequently, they trained members of the military who were carried out genocide and scorched earth policies in Guatemala and other countries of Latin America. And now we see certain nuances. The United States, that was also important for supporting the CC, the Commission Against Impunity and Corruption. But then the Guatemalan government was very skillful. They sought to ingratiate themselves with Trump. They changed the location of the Guatemalan embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, one of the few governments to do so. And it signed an agreement to be a third country, a third safe country, which is not safe for us. The United States has given a lot of political oxygen over the years to the governments of Guatemala. And today, they have finally understood that corruption causes migration. They've begun to impose some sanctions, the Magnitsky List, the Engels List. But I think that they should act more quickly to sanction corrupt actors linked to the central government and the economic powers. Otherwise, the same problems are going to continue. For corruption is also a cause of migration.
Telma Cabrera, talk about your presidential platform, what you were calling for in Guatemala.
Nuestras demandas son de pueblo, no es personal, es una lucha colectiva que viene diseñado desde los
Our presidential platform demands are the demands of the people. It's not a personal thing. It's a collective struggle that has been designed from our communities, from being dispossessed of all of our wealth. Ever since the 1954 coup d'etat, ending the 10 years of democratic spring in Guatemala, well, as a result of that, we have suffered eviction of indigenous communities from places where the communities have historically lived, and now they're communities, well, we don't even have anywhere to live. Single crop agriculture has expanded and ended up causing diseases, for example, as a result of a single crop agriculture. So within the government plan that we put forward, which is the proposal to have a constitutional assembly, fighting for our rights as human beings, and at the same time respecting the rights of Mother Earth. In other words, life in balance with Mother Earth and nature. We are also proposing that we build a plurinational state in which the different indigenous peoples are present with our delegates, and that will not just be used as a political banner. We need to have representation of the peoples with self-government. We need to have a political constitution drafted by the peoples. The idea is to defend life.
Porque ante esto quisiera complementar, porque ante esta situación.
And let me round out my answer. In the face of the situation of evictions, there's greater migration, and greater migration leads to greater disintegration of families. And for those who are in Guatemala as well, it represents an attack on our health. There is major malnutrition. Even though Guatemala is a territory, a country filled with wealth, but that wealth is poorly distributed. It's in just a few hands. And that is why we, the peoples, are the ones who suffer the consequences. And that is why we were right to propose a project for the nation, a constitutional assembly to address all of the needs that we have as a country. So when we stood up to say we are human rights defenders, then they label us as terrorists, criminals, thieves. And that is why we had to propose this project of a nation, saying we are not just rowdy ones, we're not criminals. We love life. We know how to make proposals. It's just that they're afraid of us.
So what happens when you go back to Guatemala now? They have ruled you are not a presidential candidate. Do you accept this?
Bueno. Lo que pasa es que nos estamos fortaleciendo cada día más.
Well, the thing is that we are getting stronger every day. They might be shutting the doors to us in these elections, but our aim is not just elections. Our struggle is getting stronger. We have showed that we have followed all the legal procedures. We are peace-loving peoples, and we respect the laws and procedures for participation. But despite that, they prohibit our participation. But we get stronger and stronger because our aim is not just to participate in elections. We want to go beyond that, proposing a project for the nation with structural changes, fighting corruption. Corruption is there because there are structural problems. It's a sign of the structural problems. And so we say, we have identified the illness, but we have the medicine, which is our proposal. And we're going to be strengthening our proposal, showing that we too know how to denounce the situation internationally, and that we are able to follow the procedures. This is the path that we're following now.
Guatemalan presidential candidate Telma Cabrera and her running mate, Jordán Rodas, they have been banned from running for president in Guatemala's June election. Special thanks to Maria Teresena, Tarina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Mike Burke, Robbie Karen, and Charlie Roberts. Oh, and congratulations to my beloved niece, Anna, and Scott on the birth of their son, Hugo Solomon. Welcome to the world, Hugo, and congratulations to his big brother, Miles, from his Kveling Tia. I'm Amy Goodman.
Bonne fête, rendez-vous.
On est déjà en mars, ce qui veut dire que les célébrations entourant le 25e anniversaire des Rendez-vous de la francophonie sont en cours. Dès maintenant, visitez le rvf.ca pour voir ce que les rendez-vous vous ont préparé.
Radio Goethe. Modern German music at its best. Every Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This is Germany calling. This is Radio Goethe.